From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, while streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we're your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Boy, am I excited about my interview this hour. I've been telling you about a man whom I consider one of the absolute best, greatest artists in the entire world. He was born in England. He lives now in Los Angeles. And this guy's resume is absolutely incredible. We're talking about names like The X-Files, Kiss, Rob Zombie, Fangoria, Mars Attacks, H.P. Lovecraft's work. It just goes on and on and on. His portfolio is the kind of thing that sort of makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. And I'm very fortunate that he is working on the art for some of the projects that I have in the works. He designed the cover for the Gringo Maniac Murder Spree. He created that. And right now he's working on the poster for my new independent film called The Commodore. This is a guy who is in demand the world over. His website is MrSam.com. That's MISTER-SAM.com. He is the hand of horror, the drawer of dread, the Cthulhu of creativity. Mr. Sam Sheeran, welcome, sir, to Speaking of Strange.
Hello, Joshua. Thank you for such a lengthy intro.
Well, you're very welcome, and I think it's only fair to tell everybody that you are suffering from a cold this evening, and our well wishes are with you, and I'm so happy that you, despite your cold, have agreed to come on the radio and be a part of the show tonight. So let me just go ahead and ask you, though, right off the bat. It's one thing to look up your Wikipedia page. It's one thing to get onto to Google and type in Sam Sheeran. It's one thing to look at all your art, but I want to know from your perspective, in your words, what is it that you do, Sam?
What is it that I do? I guess I'm much like yourself and, a lot of our listeners that have this huge interest in the unexplained. And since childhood, like everybody, we've grown up in and around this. It's branched out into television and more so now with the internet. And so the access to the supernatural, the paranormal, anything to do with the strange is just sort of, it's like a tidal wave these days. It's everywhere. But it gives me the opportunity now to connect with people directly who've had strange encounters, to listen to their witness reports, if you will, maybe do some illustrations based on that. Really living the dream, investigating monsters, ghosts, you name it.
And you're taking these concepts and you are breaking them down into your interpretation, and you're creating these, chilling, stylized portrayals of these things that the rest of us just talk about. I mean, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, somebody can look at a piece of Sam Sheeran artwork, and there is a whole story there. And I'm not exaggerating. I hope anybody listening will go to Google, type in Sam Sheeran, S-H-E-A-R-O-N, and look at some samples of your work. It's my understanding, Sam, that you are one of these people who was just always, always drawing from the time you were a kid. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, according to my mum, I've been drawing since I could hold a pencil. And growing up again, watching things like Godzilla and Jason and the Argonauts, and then visiting the Natural History Museum in Liverpool in England, where I was born. Growing up around real monsters really sort of set me off in that direction.
And so now, when you work these days, do you usually start with a pen or a pencil in your hand, or do you start by sitting down in front of a computer? What's your process like?
It's a real mixture. Again, today with technology, you know, we have digital paint programs that can sort of speed up certain enhancements, if you will. We can sort of look at textures. If we needed the reptile skin, we can go and find some of that, and we can work that into the artwork. But everything really begins with pencil and ink, traditional sort of comic book or illustration style drawings, and I'll build up various layers and work into it, and then everything finds its way through a machine at the end of the day. Everything gets scanned in, and then, as I say, enhanced and sort of brought to life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tell us basically the course of your life and career. How would you take yourself, let me put it this way, if you look at yourself as that kid who's, you know, drawing spooky things, and then you look at yourself today, explain that course, that path that has led you to this point.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose I'm living the dream again. You know, there's a lot of people that wish they could do what I do, and so I'm very fortunate. But it, you know, it does require effort and work with anything that allows people to sort of get to that point in their life that they've really aimed for years and years. I went through art school, I went through art college, I did a degree, I became a qualified teacher, then I had exhibitions, and then at the end of it, I really wanted to sort of pursue what I wanted to do. And being a fan of rock music and metal music, I approached some of my personal heroes and said, hey, this is what I do. They got back to me and said, would you like to do artwork for the band or what have you? And it just sort of word of mouth spiraled from that. And then I found myself in Los Angeles and never looked back.
So at what point did you make the decision to go to Los Angeles?
Probably about 10 years ago now. It really sort of, I was invited out by a band to stay at their studio. I'd done some work for them, and they were actually on tour in the UK. And I'd done some artwork for Iron Maiden. I did some merchandise designs because Derek Riggs was busy and he didn't really want to do any more merchandise. And it was a sort of reunion tour of Iron Maiden kind of thing. And so I was hired by a company called Bravado, who said, do you want to do some artwork for Iron Maiden? I said, well, yeah, who wouldn't, you know? I was thrown a few grand, and then I got on the next plane to Los Angeles, stayed with my friends who I'd created for. And then after that, you know, meeting people who they knew, coming back and forth for the last 10 years, spending about 6 months of each year, sort of 3 months here, 2 months there, really sort of traveling around, going through all the redwoods, going all the way up to Oregon, Washington, spending a lot of time in New York every October, and just really falling in love with America. I miss England. I love it. I miss the rain. All my friends and family are there. But it really doesn't compare to the United States. There's so much here. It's just incredible.
So what is it that makes you want to create frequently these works that have a ghoulish or macabre atmosphere as opposed to, you know, a nice landscape with tulips or daisies or whatever?
It's funny, you know, growing up, I've always been asked, why don't you draw kittens or a bowl of fruit or something normal? And, I'd be at school and I'd be drawing athletes. We were given this sort of draw with pages ripped out of a sports magazine for the boys, and the girls had a fashion magazine. And the art teacher at the time, I think we were maybe 12 or 13, he was telling us to sort of learn the human form from these magazine sort of trimmings. And I would put animal heads on them and hooves and give them wings and things like that so that they looked like Egyptian gods or something. And he would walk past and sort of snatch the paper off the table and hold it up for everyone to see and say, Sam Sheeran will amount to nothing but drawing comic books. And then he would throw it down again, you know. So that really sort of made me smile because he was right, and I didn't see that as a bad thing. You know, a lot of people would love to draw and illustrate for comic books and the unexplained and monsters and things like that. And it really fuels me because you don't see those things every day. You don't see, two-headed geese and things like that. So it's sort of the fascination of the unknown. It just sort of fuels everything. Anything I can get my hands on that's strange, I just love it.
Well, you know, we have this cliche of the tortured artist. But, I mean, is it true for you? Are you a tortured artist?
Currently with this cold, yes.
right.
Absolutely. A little fever here and there, I'm seeing strange visions. A tortured artist, I wouldn't say I'm tortured. Perhaps a little obsessed with certain things. I like to attack illustration and artwork from the angle of natural history. Like I say, I grew up in and around museums, and the very real aspect of cryptozoology and monsters being out there as an actual unknown species is far more fascinating to me than Greek mythology. As much as I love Greek mythology, and it's wonderful to look at all these, the Minotaur and the Hydra and all these fantastical beasts. But today, if you look at cryptozoology, and there's a million TV shows and books and everything else, podcasts, you name it, but that's real, and that really fuels me, there's something to this. Giant turtles, giant birds, strange species that no one's ever seen before, except for a few who claim, that really gets me going.
Okay, we have a couple minutes before our first break, but let me ask you this before that. Do you feel, let's say you lived 100 years ago or 200 years ago, what do you think that you would have been doing?
I would probably be running for my life, fleeing witch hunters or something like that, I would imagine. I'd probably keep myself to myself if I was smart, but my interest in the supernatural probably would have gotten me into a lot of trouble. Either that or I'd be working in the Vatican somewhere, in the archives. Who knows?
But do you think you'd be painting with oils or sculpting? If you didn't have computers to work with, what's your chosen method?
I would absolutely go the traditional route. It would probably be pen and ink, and I'd probably be illustrating volumes and volumes of books on natural history, all the different workings of animals and what they really are. I think that would be my angle, pen and ink.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I will ask Sam Sheeran about some of his experiences creating iconic works of art for names you know very well, Rob Zombie, Kiss, Iron Maiden, The X-Files. I mean, again, the list goes on and on. And, sort of what insight that he's gotten being in such a crucial position, taking the concepts that people think about related to these bands, these brands, and condensing them into a striking image. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop. You are listening to Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
I am the one extend my name, son, slipping through the
Yeah, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual. Keeping you company tonight, I am Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And the number to Wright's Coin Shop is 828-298-5402. Again, that's 828-298-5402. I'm talking right now with, no kidding, my friends, one of the greatest artists in the world. You have seen his work somewhere. Most of it is, yeah, it's kind of dark, it's nightmarish, it's macabre, but not all of it. The names associated with his resume, it just, they go on and on and on. Kiss, Rob Zombie, Mars Attacks, The X-Files, Iron Maiden. His name is Mr. Sam Sheeran, and I hope that you will visit his website and just click around. Just take a look. The website is MrSteer-Sam.com. MrSam.com. We'll have that linked up for you at SpeakingOfStrange.com. He's joining us tonight from Los Angeles. And so, Sam, obviously, as an artist, you're used to working in the quiet, alone, sort of behind the scenes. But tell us about some of those times when you've gotten starstruck, shall we say, when you got an opportunity to meet some of these people that you admired and work with them creatively?
That's a great question. A lot of what I do, I would say probably 50% of what I do, the day job, in a sense, is creating comic book covers or album sleeves for bands. And growing up through my teens and my 20s and to this day, I love rock and metal music, and meeting the people that I used to have a poster of on my bedroom wall and then creating artwork for them and having that published out there and sort of helping them progress and sort of giving a little piece back, in a sense, is a real thrill. It's almost surreal. It doesn't really even sink in that I would know these people. You know, occasionally now I'll get, you know, a phone call, hey, do you want to go and get a coffee? Here and there, because I live in Los Angeles, and before, it was, back in the days, way before Facebook, way before MySpace, it was impossible to reach these people because they would have, the record label would be the sort of storefront, if you will, and you could never sort of access the individuals in terms of offering your skills as an artist to create for them. But then with the advent of MySpace and Facebook, it was much easier to directly contact them. And now, as I say, actually just grabbing lunch with them or going seeing a film, it's a different world today. I think almost the world of the rock star is kind of dead, in a sense. There's no mystique anymore because you can literally just contact anybody, you know.
Well, who are we talking about? Give us some specifics. Who are some of these individuals that you're meeting with that really meant something to you?
I think the number one biggest influence in terms of visual direction and thought process would be the late Peter Steele. He was the front man for the band Type O Negative from Brooklyn, New York, and unfortunately he died back in 2010. But I had the pleasure of meeting him, you know, several times over, and still friends with some of his band members and crew to this day. Of course, I've met Rob Zombie a couple of times. He's a really nice guy, really polite, very friendly. And, you sort of initially have these ideas in your mind what they're going to be like, and then once you sort of realize that they are just people, like famous actors, you know, you'll run into one of them in a cafe and you sort of look twice and you think, oh, God, it's that guy from that show. And then it really, it's a big reality check when you sort of, it does sink in that they are just people like yourself. And it almost pushes you in retrospect to sort of say, well, I can do this. If anyone can do this, then I can do this. It's about time and effort. It's about wanting it enough. So the inspiration continues even afterwards, I suppose.
Well, it's the ultimate compliment that these, you know, giant names, these giant brands come to you and say, we want you to create something and we trust you to create something that's going to live up to the highest caliber, the most dramatic extent of what we want to represent ourselves with. There are a lot of people who listen to this show who are big X-Files fans. What was your involvement with the X-Files like? How'd that turn out?
I was hired by IDW Publishing because I previously created artwork for them, various titles and comic books that they published, 30 Days of Night, the Angel series, which was a spin-off from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, if you remember. And in fact, Juliet Landau actually co-wrote that, and I'd been friends with her through one of the bands that I know. So it was like a real sort of convoluted chain of connections. And then I started creating more and more for IDW, various different covers, H.P. Lovecraft's hardback, and then the picture of Dorian Gray and Genghis Khan, Secret History, and all of these different things. And then all of a sudden they said, hey, would you like to do some X-Files? And of course I said, well, yeah, you know, who wouldn't? That's the ultimate, you know, that's the biggest unexplained show out there, really. And so I've ended up doing, I think it's 7 hardback covers now for these collected volumes of all the X-Files comics ever. So it was a real honor sort of standing down at San Diego Comic-Con, and there's Gillian Anderson and everybody signing, and it's just really, really strange, but what a thrill.
The tax, how did that come about?
That was the same sort of situation. I'd get a call from the publisher and say, we're doing a whole series of the old school bubblegum cards, and we're having a new spin on it, which was, I think it was 30 seconds later. And so you would look at the original card and then imagine what would happen in that scene, and then you'd create that image. And they had a whole caliber of different artists, and I was one of them invited to be a part of that. So again, that was a little bit of an honor to keep Mars Attacks alive.
Now, if we consider that your whole life revolves around creating images, and I mean, I'm being a little presumptuous to say that, but I think obviously, you know, a significant chunk does. How do you take that and put a value on it? So when somebody comes to you and says, we want you to do this or that or the other, I mean, how do you, you know, reduce that into a calculation for a career?
A really good question. Of course, it changes from client to client. It changes from year to year, project to project. If I'm doing just a single book cover compared to an entire fully illustrated book, or if I'm doing an album sleeve, or if I'm doing just the merchandise for that tour, for that band, it really does vary. But in terms of putting a value and a price on things, time is money. And, you know, for the longest time, I would do it in a sense of a passion, as a sort of a thrill, just to be involved with it. And then go through my 20s and then 30s, it really became sort of quite apparent that this is what I was going to be doing for the next couple of years, and that I should really start charging real money in order to give up a day job, in a sense. So I've been doing that for the last 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. And now it's clear to see all of the, again, dark, ghoulish, macabre stuff that you're famous for. But what are some of the things that you've worked on that might be a little bit surprising for the rest of us that don't fit into that mold that people associate with Mr. Sam?
Oh, gosh, you're really throwing curveballs at me today. I don't know. I mean, working in the music industry, again, you'll sort of have insights to various projects that not everybody does, sort of behind the scenes, the recording of an album. And every now and then I'll be asked, would I make an appearance in a music video? I was actually doing the spoken word for the latest album from Fear Factory. They wanted a British guy to give a sort of Blade Runner speech monologue at the beginning and the end of the album. So there's those little trinkets and elements of my creative life that not many people really know about. I mean, I'm open to anything, really. I love acting. I performed as Dracula in Bram Stoker's Dracula theater production in North Hollywood for 20 shows, 2-hour shows, rave reviews. So that was a thrill. And again, a lot of people didn't even realize that I actually do act. I did some theater in London 10 years ago. And being in Hollywood, I thought, why not just have a look, see what's going on here now?
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I will ask Mr. Sam Sharon about things that inspire him, and especially, what is it like when he goes to sleep? Dreams? Nightmares? Nothing? Who knows? I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unused unusual becomes usual, and it's called Speaking of Strange. That explores the summit of mankind's enlightenment and the pit of his depravity. It's called Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren. Thank you for spending your evening with us. Tonight's program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And I'm joined right now by Mr. Sam Sharon, the Hand of Horror, the Drawer of Dread. And he is a guy who is, he's just really a great artist. That's what it boils down to. His art has just been, it's just been everywhere. I mean, and you've seen it somewhere, somehow. And, you know, Sam, I'm curious as to what actually inspires you in terms of, well, let's just start with your dreams. Are you a dreamer? Do you have dreams and nightmares? What happens when you sleep?
I do. I do dream, and I do have nightmares. Very rarely will I have a nightmare. Although it was a couple of weeks ago, I did have a really awful, awful sensation where I woke up in my apartment here in Hollywood, and I had the just bone-chilling sensation there was someone in my room. And of course, you know, I've read about shadow people, I've read about apparitions, and I've read about dreams and how it's all very touch and go as to whether it's a psychological situation, you're coming out of a dream and it's just you're breathing shallow and you're hallucinating and things like that. So I was very aware of that from a skeptical point of view, but then there's always that little bit of your brain that sort of shocks you into thinking, well, you should really put the light on just in case. And I leap out of bed and I look around my apartment. There's nobody there, but there's writing all over my full-length mirror wardrobe. And I really thought that someone had gotten into my apartment and had written it while I was asleep, which is even more terrifying than them actually doing anything. It really kind of threw me. And so I, running around in my boxer shorts, made sure there was no one in the whole building, go back to my room, and the writing's still there. And as I approach it, the light in the room, there isn't a ceiling light, there's a lamp. And for some reason, I didn't switch it on when I left out of the room. So when I go back in, it's still dark, and I can just make it out with the moonlight. And sure enough, there's writing floor to ceiling on this full-length sliding door of a wardrobe, mirror. And as I approach it, it seems to fade away, almost like breath on a glass window fading away. If you breathe on a pint glass kind of thing, it will, on a cold day, you'll see it appear and almost become solid, and then within seconds it fades away. And as I approached it, when I finally put my hand on the glass, that was the last bit that had vanished. And I don't know what that is. I put it down to probably just some kind of thought form of my dream that's made its way out into my real world, and I've continued to hallucinate it. Or there's something supernatural going on there, and there's some kind of message that maybe I didn't have a chance to read it and I should have waited a little longer. But I do have dreams, I have nightmares, I have all kinds of strange things going on in my mind. But I'm a big believer that what you're doing in the day certainly influences your dreams. It's putting everything in order in a filing cabinet in your head. So if you go somewhere new, or if you sleep somewhere new, for me anyway, I'll quite often have a nightmare because I'm unfamiliar with the area.
Wow. I mean, that story, that kind of blows me away, because you would seem to be a prime candidate for a tulpa experiment. And you know, I'm sure, what tulpas are. So maybe we should talk about that some other time, because, the boundary between what's inside and outside, it gets pretty blurry once in a while. And, you know, we probably just imagine that boundary to begin with. And as an artist, that's what you're doing. You're channeling what these images are in your head into some external form and representing them. Do you feel that you actually are sometimes not creating these things but channeling them from elsewhere?
I would say very loosely, yes. I wouldn't want to claim everything came from my own mind. I'm a firm believer in instinct being a great representation of reincarnation. I don't think in so many ways, the majority of the reincarnation situation is purely instinct, memory in the genes passed down. And I think that, you know, for me to have an experience in a dream and then bring it to life, in a sense, on the page, or even 3D, I am, I suppose, some kind of conduit or a channel for them to come through. It's very, very sort of tongue-in-cheek, and people will be sort of rolling their eyebrows at the thought of it. And quite often myself too, you know, I'd be thinking, no, you know, I just draw those because that interests me. But then more and more things happen, and the large collection that I have of books on the unexplained, I have a collection of Ouija boards on the wall, really, really old ones, 1920s, 1910. I have a whole bunch of strange artifacts, a lovely collection of taxidermy. So I'm surrounded by history, and I'm surrounded by things that inspire me and fascinate me. And then once in a while, I'll see something out the window as though it's spying on me, you know, as though I've allowed them to come in, or I've let them out, in a sense. So it does make you wonder, you know, is it all in the mind, or is there actually something that, unbeknown to me, is a channel that they're using to come through? Who knows?
You know, you recently sent me a wonderful gift. You sent me an image you had created of a Bigfoot inspired by the Patterson Bigfoot footage, and your images are just striking, and that this year is going to be framed in my Asheville Mystery Museum. And and it's funny to me that you're able to just kind of do these things on, I presume, on the side, because you're just an artist. You're always creating things.
Yeah.
But you also are – you're a podcaster. And tell us about your own podcast.
Well, I'm one of three hosts, if you will. It's actually IntoTheFrayRadio.com. Into the Fray, F-R-A-Y. And it's hosted by Shannon LeGros, formerly of Sasquatch Chronicles. And we have Shannon's in Vegas, and we have Ryan Sprague, who's a UFO journalist, writer, and playwright. He's based up in New York, and then there's me in Los Angeles. So we have this nice little triangular zone across the states. And every Thursday we'll put out an episode where we'll just discuss the latest strange news we've come across on the internet or in the paper, if we're lucky enough to get a paper there these days. And then the second half of the show will be a guest, and Shannon will interview them. It's whether it's a witness to a Bigfoot encounter, or I think Thursday, we're recording this now, Thursday's episode is about Black Clad Children, so that's a good one. There you go.
Have you ever met a super fan who just saw you and said, oh my God, and flipped out and asked you to do something crazy for them, draw something somewhere or whatever? Any stories come to mind?
There's a couple, but you know, I would never embarrass them by naming their names.
Of course. Yeah.
But you know, there's people who followed my work over the years that after moving to Los Angeles hadn't even known that I'd lived here, and they got really excited when they found out that I wasn't, you know, living in England. I actually lived here, and they were sort of mind blown. And I'll go and I'll sign the covers of books I've illustrated and comic books and things like that at San Diego Comic Con every July, obviously down in San Diego. And you'll have this line of people, whether it's for X-Files or whether it's for 30 Days of Night or Angel or something like that. And once in a while, you'll see the same faces coming back, and they'll always, you know, ask you to draw something. And, of course, they never charge. I don't charge for autographs. I think that's just something I could never do. People generally across the board in these conventions, that's how they make their money. It sort of pays for their travel and things like that, or at least that's their reasoning. I personally couldn't do it. You know, if someone's bought a book and they paid for a ticket to that convention, why would I ask them for any more money? It's just an honor for them to recognize me and my work and to say, hey, will you sign this? I mean, that's payment enough for me.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, we're coming up on our last break of this hour, and when we return, I'm going to ask Mr. Sam Sheeran what advice that he would give to another artist out there who has talent, can't figure out how to, you know, reach the right people. It's an age old story. I mean, maybe there's a kid listening to the show right now, and the kid says, "Man, I want to be like Sam Sheeran someday. I want to create album covers, and I want to, you know, create movie posters." What advice does he give about perfecting your art form and also reaching the right people? We'll find out soon. Again, his website is Mr. Sam, that's M-I-S-T-E-R hyphen S-A-M, MrSam.com. Also, he's a part of Into the Fray. That's a podcast that you can hear him on regularly. And, hey, the guy, he is truly the hand of horror. I'm Joshua P. Warren. And speaking of strange, we'll be right back.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and keep in mind, next hour we call the Dark 30 Hour. This is what we save for the last hour late at night, because we talk about some of the more sordid and seedy stories and content, not for the easily offended, not for the kiddies. And so if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can stick around for that, again, coming up soon in hour number three. But right now, I am wrapping up my conversation with the hand of horror, the drawer of dread, the Cthulhu of creativity, Mr. Sam Sheeran. His website, mister-sam.com. That's mister-sam.com. He's one of the greatest artists in the world, and you don't have to take my word for it. Just go to Google and type his name in. We've gone over this already, but you know, it doesn't matter if you're into X-Files or Mars Attacks or Kiss or Rob Zombie, or if you're into Iron Maiden. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. He is the guy who has enough talent for these big companies and brands to trust him to represent what you know, what they're all about, and his images are absolutely striking. You can compare his work to a lot of great artists. I won't do it because I don't want to go down that hole, because he has his own kind of style, and it's just, it really is chilling and incredible. Mr. Sam Sheeran, let me ask you, sir, if there is, let's say, a young person listening out there right now who has some real talent, who wants to follow in your footsteps, what advice would you give that young person?
That's a great question. I would say two things, really, a whole bunch of things, actually. But first and foremost, something that my mum would always say to me is, no one's going to knock on your door. You have to get out there. No one, however good you are, will even know you exist unless you put yourself out there. And so it's really a good idea to sort of do a lot of work as gifts for people you admire. It's if you're a fan of a band and you maybe want to do some fan work, that's a good way to get sort of recognized. The other one really is just quite simply believe in yourself. And if you want something enough, you're going to get it. Because if you don't, it simply means you didn't want it enough. But again, back to the sort of, you've got to get out there. You have to really just open your mouth, be brave. Don't be egotistical. Don't be ballsy, but, just be confident in your own work, because if you are, they will be. I remember in 2013, Halloween of all times of the year, I met Clive Barker, the legendary British, also Liverpool-born as me, writer of all things macabre and horror. Stephen King once said he was the future of horror. So here's Clive Barker. I'm a huge fan of his books and his film works, obviously, and he's a painter and an artist himself. A lot of people don't realize, but he has over 2,000 giant canvases up in his house in the hills. And I went to an event, and he was there signing autographs and doing little drawings for free. And I just approached him, and I said to him, I'm a really big fan of your work. I'm also from Liverpool. You're a big influence of mine, and I'd love to work with you someday. And lo and behold, 3 weeks later, I was invited up to his house, to the office of his company up in the hills, Seraphim Inc. And then after that, I've since illustrated Hellraiser, comic book, you know, the covers. I've done the legendary Books of Blood as fully illustrated and animated as a series. So really, you've got to believe in yourself and just put it out there, because, like my mom said again, no one's going to knock on your door. You have to get out there and ask. You have to put yourself forward, because no one else will.
I love that you said that, because, you know, there's this old adage, if you build a better mousetrap, you know, the world will beat a path to your doorway. And that is just not true. The world has to know. And every little step, like you said, that you can make to, you know, just send something out there for free. Express yourself. I mean, now it's easier than ever. That's going to bring you closer to your goal. And, you know, I want to tell you on a personal note, Sam, I am just so honored that your artwork represents some of my wacky projects, whether it be the Gringo Maniac Murder Spree or the upcoming independent film The Commodore. Everybody should know you're a genuine guy who actually cares about working with creative people and really, you know, trying to produce something that is fun and visual and engaging. And, you know, you're not just a talented guy. You've got the right kind of attitude. So I want to thank you for everything that you have done and everything that you continue to do. And thank you so much for being my guest tonight on Speaking of Strange.
Well, thank you, Joshua. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you the best of luck and everybody out there listening also in your own projects. Take care.
There you have it, my friends, Mr. Sam Sheeran. Again, his website, MrSam.com, MISTER-SAM.com. There is a link for you at SpeakingOfStrange.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be the Dark 30 Hour. I am Joshua P. Warren. You are listening to Speaking of Strange.